Something you guys mentioned in your Kids Who Can Empathize episode was that we should allow our kids to feel that anger. I think you mentioned allowing your kids to stomp. This may be a ridiculous question, but is stomping always acceptable? My daughter got upset I didn't give her way about something, so she stomped off to her room. Is this considered disrespectful? Or it should be allowed, or should it be allowed because she's expressing I upset her by not giving her what she wanted? You're listening to the In This Together podcast with Dr. Josh and Christy Straub, a podcast dedicated to helping you live, love, and lead well as a spouse, a parent, and a human being.
Because no matter where you're at on your journey, you're not alone. We're in this together. Welcome back to the In This Together podcast. We are once again delighted that you have joined us, and Homegrown is now out, and we are so excited. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Go to our Instagram pages. We'll put those our Instagram pages in the show notes because you can follow us on there if you're a listener and see the behind the scenes of our lives. But we've also been posting about Homegrown and the book, and it's really cool.
I am so, like, holding it in my own little hands. Like, it's so cute.
It's fun.
I'm like, it's good. I'm just...
Yeah, the graphic team did a fantastic job.
They did a great job.
And we just hope that it multiplies and influences your family at a cool level. So today we're doing some question and discussion. Again, we're going to put in the show notes, What Am I Feeling and Homegrown. You guys have heard us talk about those two products and those two resources for you guys to be able to influence your kids. We talk a lot about emotional safety, which a lot of the questions today are about emotional safety with our kids. And I don't think there's a better opportunity or a better book, if you will, to be able to buy for your kids to start labeling emotion at an early age than What Am I Feeling. So I'm a little biased about that, but I believe that to be true.
It's been super cool to just hear story after story after story of families and kids. And interesting, like, there's times where it's stories about the kids and how this is provided, you know, they're walking through hard things or just complicated things and they were confused. And we should just tell some of those stories because it is super profound.
So let me give you a real quick story that I think is a quick nugget and would be a great lesson. It taught me a great lesson. I got a video from a dear friend, and he had his little boy on there, and the little boy, his son struggled to go across the bridge, you know, the wobbly bridge on the playground. And he kept telling his dad, I can't. And his dad looked at him and said, no, son, we don't use that word in our house. You can tell me you're scared, but you can't say you can't. And because we'll deal with feelings, but we're not going to let those feelings take over, you know, what we do. So long story short is the boy is now going across the bridge because he's able to label his fear, and he's conquered that fear, and has the feelings chart hanging on the refrigerator. And his dad asked him a few days later, like, what are you feeling today? And he pointed to the superhero and said, feeling brave. And after he did it, and it's just really cool to be able to see those testimonies and to hear from families and hear those stories. But here's the cool part is his son, who I think is 5-ish, something like that, actually catches his dad saying, I can't, and says, dad, we don't use those words in our house. You can tell me you're scared, but you can't say I can't. And so it teaches kids to say, hey, whoa, you know, you got to catch us as mom and dad too.
Well, and he said the whole line. Did you hear him? His little 5-year-old voice. He said, like, name your feeling and then go to God and ask him to help you with it. And I was like, you got it.
That's it.
Little dude, you got it.
That's it.
If only we could learn that too as adults. So today we're doing question and discussion, which we love hearing from real people. You, and thank you for sharing part of your lives with us. Some of these are really fabulous questions that I think so many of us will relate to. This one is from Natasha. Natasha says, I wanted to reach out to you both and thank you for the episode on the reasons why couples feel disconnected. It blessed me so much. Thank you for your honesty, vulnerability, and transparency. I identified a lot with being passive aggressive in my communication with my husband. Today, I was encouraged and inspired to give myself grace, to love my husband one day at a time, and to celebrate the small wins. To also love not just the man, but the little boy that is in need of acceptance and love. I will also give myself grace to grow and allow the little girl within to be healed. I appreciate you both. Keep doing what you're doing. Lives are truly being changed, Natasha.
Wow. And I think what's so cool about that story is for all of us to just learn to give ourselves grace and take it one day at a time. No matter how disconnected you are in your marriage, no matter how anxious you are in raising your kids, and whether you're in those early years or you're in the teenage years and you're just trying to figure things out, giving yourself grace in the moment and celebrating the wins and looking outside of yourself into the heart of your spouse, it changes things.
And not being overwhelmed by how far I think you feel like you need to go. I remember we were on the Fierce Marriage podcast, remember, with Ryan Selena that first time? And he asked this question. He was like, is this, I hear what you're saying. I love it. I want to do this. But he's like, does it ever feel like it's just unattainable? Like people, like you need a degree or something to figure this out, or you need something. And we both kind of were like chomping at the bit, wanting to answer. I'm like, I want to answer. Because I think that's the misconception, that it requires something extravagant to get from where you are to where you want to be. And I think Natasha hit the nail on the head. I mean, she's doing it. It's going after the small wins and it's giving yourself grace, but it's not complicated actually. It's really seeing it. There is this little boy in her husband and the little girl who are looking to each other to find love and acceptance. And it's pretty cool. Okay, next, Jordan. I recently stumbled across your podcast and I love it. I have a 4-year-old little girl and a 1-year-old twins. I can't wait to get your feelings book. Something you guys mentioned in your Kids Who Can Empathize episode was that we should allow our kids to feel that anger. I think you mentioned allowing your kids to stomp. This may be a ridiculous question, but is stomping always acceptable? My daughter got upset I didn't give her her way about something, so she stomped off to her room. Is this considered disrespectful, or it should be allowed, or should it be allowed because she's expressing I upset her by not giving her what she wanted? I feel like there's such a fine line with allowing them to express their anger. How would you teach them when it's acceptable? Keep doing great things. This young mom truly appreciates the wisdom and advice you have.
Great question. You know, for us, and this is what I do in my own head. So when our kids are snapping back or stomping their feet, or they make some type of angry, they act out in anger in that moment, I see it as, is that how I would want my son or daughter to treat another adult in that moment? I understand that I'm the dad, I understand that I'm the parent, and I'm going to get the brunt of the emotion because I'm the safe person. But I also want to teach my children to learn to manage their emotion in the moment, no matter who it is that they're in front of. And so in my mind, I see that as disrespect from the standpoint of I wouldn't want my son or daughter doing that, acting that way with other adults. And so I actually stop that behavior and I will separate the feeling and what's happening with the behavior. So again, we talk a lot about leading in grace and following up in truth. And there's a lot of nuances in this. I mean, we're discussing it, right? There's a lot of nuances in this. It's not going to go perfectly every time. Your kids are going to act out sometimes and not get the, it's not going to always go well or perfectly. But generally speaking, the way that I view this is separating the behavior from the feeling and helping our kids be able to do that. So in other words, if they're angry in that moment, and this is where, and David Thomas did such a good job of in the What Our Boys Need episode, if you go back and listen to that one, just, and we've interviewed him a couple times, go back and listen to his episodes, they're so good. But one of his pieces of advice that we like to use is having a separate room where you get the anger out. So it separates that anger.
Or place, like a place in the room. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, there's a punching bag, or there is a, you know, an ottoman that they can go in and just kind of bang on with their fists or something. There's something that they can use, or a place in the house that they can use to get out their anger. But the ability to be able to state their anger, and in that moment, but rather than stomping off or expressing that in front of your, you know, in an inappropriate way with their behavior. Remember,
well, it's
feeling,
kind of an explosive way.
Yeah, and as we talk about in the book, you know, a feeling is just a feeling. It's not in charge of you. That message, if we can get that into our kids, that listen, like, your behavior right now is not appropriate. It's disrespectful. So there has to be a consequence for that. However, I understand that you're angry, and I appreciate that. And there's room for your anger. We just need to separate how we let out that anger. And there might be a simple way of going, and again, this isn't always going to work. This is a discussion of even your child just being able to simply state in a even if it's in an angry way, giving them room to go, I'm angry right now. Rather than walking away stomping their feet, celebrate that they can actually say, I'm angry with you, Mom, or I'm angry, you know, like, great. At least we've named the feeling, and we're doing it in a way that's not disrespectful in that moment.
And I think one thing we have noticed is that when you then mirror back the emotion or repeat back what your child is saying, even if they haven't put it into language, so you see them start to ball up their fists, like, you start to see the reaction that, like, they are angry, and you can look at them with complete, instead of matching their level of intensity or emotion, looking at them and saying, buddy, I see that you're angry. Is that right? It looks like, are you angry right now? I bet you're really angry with me. And it's like, oh, half the time it's like, I'm just trying to communicate to you how bad this feels. And once that message is, like, message received, it takes a lot of the intensity out, we find. So, like, again, like you're saying, it's having that, when we're talking about having it in a specific place, it helps the child control the anger. So it's not this explosionary, like, it's just coming out of a reaction. I'm so mad, I'm just going to, like, you know, slam doors or stomp back to my room. It's like, I'm angry, I'm going to my place because I know that's an appropriate way to get my anger out.
Is explosionary a word?
No.
I liked just, that word.
Okay. Well,
explosionary.
I don't know.
It was awesome.
I'll use that more often. Okay. This is from Kristen. I'm so grateful for your life's mission. I listen to your podcast on my way to work each week. My husband and I have 2 boys, 3 and 6. My question is an ongoing issue of our eldest son. He is full of life and energy as a little boy should be, but he does not like transitions at all. He will do anything he can to make sure that we are late. We have tried rewards. We have tried talking about respect and loving. I know that this issue hits a trigger for me because as a child, my mother was always late. Therefore, as an adult, I'm always early. Each day throughout the day, it's a struggle getting up, transitioning to breakfast, transitioning to backpacks, transitioning to getting dressed or getting out the door. Even leaving school, we have to go and say goodbye to all of the teachers. And then when we get home, transitioning into the next thing. I'm not sure where he is coming from. And in our conversations, his answer is, I just want to play, Mommy. We spend most of our time at home cooking together, doing Legos together or art or whatever they want to do. I'm a hands-on mother who just wants to help my kiddo. This one just hits the right spot and affects everyone in the family as well as others around us. I can't wait to hear your ideas.
Transitions. I'm just going to throw this out, and I don't know what your thoughts are, Christy, but I think number one, you've highlighted that this hits your trigger point. So you're heightened by this. You pay attention to it way more than, and that's great because we all have trigger points as parents. One of the biggest things is realizing what are those trigger points? What are the things that are going to frustrate the living daylights out of you?
Well, and I think what's so interesting is that for Kristen, it speaks a lot to how self-aware she is that she's seen that she felt a sense of disrespect as a child that her mom was always late. And it's like she's watching her kid repeat this pattern. But I think it's precisely what you're saying. So I would say, Kristen, you're probably, you're feeling this more than the average person would. So it's probably way more at the forefront of your mind. And it may not be as big of a deal for your son. He may just genuinely be wanting to play.
Well, and I think he's six. He's not 16. You know, one of the things you said is he's doing everything he can to make us late. The reality is he's not intentionally doing everything he can to make you late. If he was 15 or 16 and doing that, that's a different story. The fact is he's six and he's a kid and he just wants to play. And so I genuinely believe him that when he says, I just want to play, that he just wants to play. I mean, our kids are 4 and 6 and we're in the same boat. I mean, it's probably, we're not feeling it the way that you're feeling it. But at the same time too, it's, they're kids. And so I think it's him being 6 years old and just learning what it means to do time. Because he doesn't have a sense of time. Like, he just, I mean, there's not a sense of like, oh, we have to hurry, we have to get here. So I think practically speaking, and again, you can look at this as it relates to, maybe you've already done these things. I would say start earlier in the day, or start your process earlier. If you need to be out of the house by 8:30, get the process going to where you have to be out of the house by 8:50, get him out by 8:15 or by 8:20, so that you're going to be earlier than what you need to be. For him, you know, as it relates to transitions, set a timer, you know, use a timer to help him know that, hey, listen, the playtime is over. Give him expectations. Our son needs expectations. If he doesn't know what's upcoming and he's not been told what's upcoming, it overwhelms and upsets him. And so he needs to know what's upcoming and just have that expectation set. So I think expectations are also really important.
And I think as I'm just picking up, Kristen, as you're talking about your son, he sounds more type B to me. And that might just be a personality trait that he just has it's a more emotional for him moving on from thing to thing.
And he may not be type B. He may just be a kid at this stage. You know what I mean?
Like, true.
I mean, he doesn't recognize time.
True. But
or even responsibility, or that we have to be somewhere at a certain time.
Well, exactly. And I think that's where I feel like the type B, where certain kids feel that sense of responsibility earlier and they feel like they're wanting to know there's a schedule and what that is. But a timer you could try that. If that's not great for him, he may not be really motivated by time. He may be the one who truly really likes showing up late for things. But I have friends who use routine, like those basically like accomplishment charts. So what the list of things that you want him to do in the morning. So if that's, you know, brush his teeth, get dressed, have breakfast, get his backpack ready, and shoes on waiting at the door. As long as it doesn't matter what time those things are done, but the sooner they're done, then he has playtime up until he goes to school. So that it kind of gives them a little bit of free rein over, for a 6-year-old, I think he'd probably actually do pretty well at that. Knowing that there's certain things that just have to be done. And then the rest of the time in the morning is for play. And so if he can maybe walk himself through those transitions himself and know the reward is playtime up until you have to go, that might be another, thing to try.
Absolutely.
I have some mama friends who love doing that, and their kiddos have responded pretty well. Did you know that 94% of people who come to know Jesus do so before the age of 18?
That's a great statistic, but what does it mean for me as a parent? How do I teach my kids what loving God means or even looks like?
Welcome to 22-6 Parenting, a community of parents walking alongside each other to raise kids who love God and love others.
Created through the lens of child development research and grounded in Scripture, 22-6 puts the tools and ideas in your hands to be intentional without adding anything extra to your day.
22-6 has 3 main features. First is community. It is a shame-free community of parents encouraging one another in our most important role, that of mom and dad. Each month, we go live for a Facebook Q&A with the community.
Secondly is content. 22-6 provides the tools you need to talk about God to your kids. Built on the 4 key times of the day Moses encouraged to use in Deuteronomy chapter 6, each month's content includes morning prayers, dinner time stories, drive time games,
and bedtime questions.
And then there's the coaching. Each month you'll receive a coaching video on that month's mile marker or the topic with practical applications for how to foster character development and spiritual formation in your kids.
Learn more today at 226parenting.com. That is 226parenting.com.
This is from Jennifer. I just listened to the two podcasts on raising boys and girls by David Thompson and Sissy Goff, respectively. They were really insightful and helpful for me, especially the one with David regarding boys. I know the father's role was mentioned in those podcasts, and I wondered if they or you have any advice for single parents. I'm a single mom, and my kid's father is not involved. They haven't seen him in 4 years. I have a son 7 and a daughter 4. I so appreciate the podcast and even bought the book by David Thomas, but honestly, I'm feeling so overwhelmed and kind of anxious right now. Any special words for single parents?
Absolutely great question. And there's a story that I got from, first of all, I want to speak to the anxiety and overwhelm. I appreciate that. And I hear that and I receive that. And there needs to be space for that for you. At the same time, I also want you to hear this too, that just because dad's not involved doesn't mean your children are doomed. That's absolutely like, I know it can feel that way and you can feel like, oh my gosh, I'm starting from behind the eight ball. The reality is that, that's not true at all. There was a story and I can't remember where it came from. It came out of the Sticky Faith, Cara Powell, Sticky Faith movement. There was a story that I read somewhere. I'm attributing it back to that. It was somewhere in there. Where there was a story of a single mother who bought a picture frame that had like the 5 picture frames. Within one picture frame, it had 5 slots for pictures. And it was a single mom who bought one of those and she asked her kids to recognize 5 godly people that their children look up to and they want to become like one day. And she and who were actively in their lives and who were, you know, whether it was in their church or in their community, in their family, an uncle, that type of thing. And so she took the kid's picture with each of those 5 people, put them in those frames and put them out right where they would walk by them every day in their bedroom. And they would see those people and they would be reminded of those people so that her children had a community of other people, in godly men and other women, mentors in their lives, to be able to look up to. And the reality is, I think we all should be doing something like this, that this isn't for single parents, but this is for all of us. Because the reality is I can teach my kids to do something and it might not be me they listen to. It's their Uncle Ryan or their Uncle Luke, or it's their, it might not even be an uncle. It might be a friend of ours. It's another adult, a pastor in the future that they come in contact with or talk to. Sit down and find those people, that community that you can really surround yourself with. And let me say this too to you. I would really encourage you to do the same thing for you. Who are other women, other moms, other people in your life that you can pour your heart out to and that you can surround yourself with and who can walk alongside you in this season so that that overwhelmingness, that anxiousness, when that comes up and that's it's really overtaking you and your thoughts and you have trouble waking up or you're just worried or you have trouble going to sleep or whatever that is, that you have people you can talk to, that you have people you can pray with you and really journey with you through that. So I just really encourage that. I think at the end of the day, community is one of our biggest, most important things.
I just went back to look in episode 55. Jennifer we talked with Nicole C. Mullen and about single parenting. And that was a really, I don't know if you've listened to that one, but we talked about some of these things. It just reminded me as you were talking there. We really talked about the importance of community and having those people that speak into your kid's life, but also into yours. And I think it also needs to be said too that the anxiety, like Josh said, that overwhelmingness, that is probably a great reality for your life. And there's something about the you know, those of us who have a partner in raising a child, I think looking at you and validating that and saying, I am so sorry for the extra burden that you are carrying because you are doing this alone. This is hard enough with two people. And I just feel like, just to say that, I feel like you, I'm not saying you need it, but I think you're very much due the credit and the hug that says, daughter, you are doing a really good job and you're doing a really hard job well.
And I want to echo that for this next question as well, because this next question is really up a similar alley, even though there are two parents in the household. So that same hug that Christy just talked about, that same grace, we want to extend in these situations as well because they're overwhelming.
And this is from Natalia. You talk about how emotional safety of parents is the key to raising children. I couldn't agree more, and I'm so willing to change things in my life to become more emotionally safe. I'm ordering your book, Safe House, today. My husband, however, is always present, but not always emotionally safe. He's very old school when it comes to parenting and basically parents just the way his father did. In this environment, children do not have a say in things. They are encouraged to go play and not be involved in grown-up conversations. My question is about the effect it has on children, particularly boys, when only one parent is working on this and not the other. Are there extra things I can do as a mom?
The answer is there's no extra things that you can do as a mom. The answer is be yourself and be emotionally safe. And I'm gonna tie in this in blended families, because we get this question a lot as it relates to co-parenting, where one house is safe and they send their kids to another house that isn't safe. And the reality is you can't control how your husband parents your kids. You also can't control how a co-parent in another home parents your kids. What you can control is how you parent your kids. And your emotional safety in their lives really is a buffer for how they're treated in other areas. And I think what's really important for you is to not necessarily, is to not put your husband down, and it doesn't sound like you would do that at all, not to put your husband down in front of the kids, not to, you know, and this goes in divorce situations as well. Just be you and be safe. And if they come to you with, you know, issues about dad or about the other parent, listen in a way and serve in a way that isn't going to be condescending towards or ridiculing the other parent, but that is meeting the emotional need of the child. What is the child feeling, and how can the child thus navigate a particular situation based upon what they're feeling? If you can be that, and you can continue being that, it really is unbelievably powerful. A child, I think it was, I don't know who's credited with this, Annie Frank, or I've seen it credited by a lot of different people, but saying that a child needs just one adult who is radically crazy or radically in love with him or her. Just one adult who just sees that child. And I think, yeah.
And I echo, Josh, everything you just said. I kept wanting to, I think as a mom, we have this tendency to take on the extra pressure. Like if it's not being, whether it's coming from school, like maybe a teacher's not doing their job, or you don't think their friends are, you know, maybe they're being, you feel like they're being picked on at school. Maybe you feel like they're, you know, they don't have a great youth group. And it's like, we tend to then pull out this, you know, helicopter over parenting mode, which all that does is, I mean, it's really believing a lie that we are the ones that are going to create great kids to become great adults. And really, I think that one of the most freeing things as parents is recognizing that we are literally just been given the stewardship opportunity to raise these kids. They are God's and God's alone. And for the you and I's of the world, Natalia, who have that tendency to like want to hop in and protect and take care and hover over, and not, I don't even necessarily think we think it's an, in a negative way. It's like, I just want to help. I think just that to be able to literally step back with the absolute freedom that God is who he says he is, and he will do through you only what he can do. And that it will take, like Josh said, it only takes one example of emotional safety in a child's life for them to be forever changed. And I would say your husband likely will start watching and be a little curious as to, like, you know, certain changes. And it may take a lot of time. He may never change, but your boys will, because they will have known love, love without fear. And it only takes you. But I think you can hear where that fear starts to creep in, where you think, I have to get this right. And you don't have to get it right 2 out of 5 times. You've probably heard Josh say that before. Just 2 out of 5 times is where they say that emotional safety, if we get it right, it gets the outcomes, the changes, the heart and brain changes that we're looking for in our kids.
And that's John Gottman's research. Yeah.
Josh wants to like cite everything he says. And I'm like, I don't know. Someone said it one time once.
They, the proverbial they.
Josh hates when I say that. They say that. He's like, who's they? Anyway.
My friend Frank says he wants to punch they in the face.
Hey, listen.
Because we quote unquote listen to they, or we listen to the quote unquote they, and we take it as gospel truth, and you're like, that's no, absolutely not. Anyway.
But Natalia.
There's a lot of things that they say that are not right. Go ahead.
Well, true. Okay, this is from Shira. Josh and Christy, thank you so much for your podcast. I look forward to these every week. I'm a first-time foster mom to 2 wonderful and resilient boys. We've had them for 10 months, and I am in love. At 3 years and 18 months, they are amazing little individuals. Recently, we've learned that their foster plan calls for reintegration back with their birth parents in the next 2 months. While my heart is broken at the thought of saying goodbye to them, I want to help make this transition as smooth and healthy for them as possible. I would welcome your advice on how to prepare them, as well as tips and examples on how to open up dialogue on such a big issue when they are still so small. By the way, thank you so much for sharing your experiences from the survival years. I cannot express how much it has helped me. I watched for years as women around me seemed to effortlessly take on motherhood. And yet the transition season when we welcomed the boys was so, so hard. I thought perhaps there was such a struggle that maybe I was bad at being a mom. Hearing the term survival years were so impactful for me. It let me know I wasn't alone and that struggling was okay.
Let me separate those two things, because we have emailed back and forth about this, because I wanted to answer her question related to the foster kids and 18 months and 3 years, because I wasn't sure when this episode would come out and if those kiddos would be out of the house by then, and I wanted to make sure that we were serving her well. And and so we've emailed back and forth regarding that issue. The second issue, the survival years and not feeling like you're a bad mom, but it's a very real thing. I think just labeling that is so important. Yeah. And so true and so huge. And so thank you for saying that, because there's a lot of people listening who are in those early years thinking they're attributing it to themselves. And we carry so much shame when we feel like we're the only ones that our kids are just a little bit more high maintenance than other kids, or that at least what we see in other families, or we think we see in other families. And we can attribute it to ourselves. And the reality is no, this is just the early years, and it's what comes with it. And so, don't carry that shame. I think as it relates to, you know, how do we talk to them about the big issues? They're leaving. You know, my response back was they're 18 months and 3 years. And the reality is, and this was a hard reality to email back, is if they never come back to your home, the likelihood of them remembering your home is very, very slim. You guys will remember them, as you, Shira, she wrote back to me and she said, they're going to hold a special place in her heart, and we're going to always remember them. Absolutely, you will. And I think, especially for the 18-month-old, probably won't be any memory at all. 3-year-old, maybe. But even big issues, are they going to understand big issues if you have that conversation? Likely not. And so my encouragement was, especially for foster parents, where kids are coming in and out of the house. The older they are, the more ability you are to have some of those conversations about where they're going to, you know, they're going back to their biological parents and what that's going to mean and look like, and whether or not you're allowed to be in their lives versus whether you're not allowed to be in their lives. I think there's that expectation should be set, and just the ability, again, I'm going to say this, to be emotionally safe for your kids. And I know I mention this every episode. For those of you listening, safe house, how emotional safety is the key to raising kids who live, love, and lead well. We get a lot of questions about emotional safety. What does it look like? What does it mean? That book unpacks all of that. And it's very powerful for these adoptive years, foster parents and that type of thing, because it really is about secure attachment. It's really about your kids developing a secure attachment with a primary guardian or human being or person, and your ability to be present. The way I define it is it's the posture from which we parent, not the techniques that matter most. So it's really that posture of love minus fear. How can we create a posture of love where we get rid of our own fears? We're not parenting out of fear. You know, sometimes I'm just going to go back and give an example here based upon the questions we got today, but the fear of being late to a party. And so I have fear of being late to an event or a party or school or somewhere, to the point that my fear of being late because of how it, you know, looks on me leads me to lashing out on my children who just want to play. Or leads me to saying things I would later regret, or leads me to have a pattern of being unsafe for my kids. And so I just use that example as one that we got earlier. That's why I describe being a secure parent, being an aware parent, understanding your own stuff really is important, because it is powerful in how you show up for your kids. It's powerful in how present you are with your kids. It's when we're blinded by our own stuff that we'll usually see our frustrations, things we say, yelling. That's where you see all that kind of stuff come out, because it comes out from our own insecurities, from our own family histories and that type of thing. And so I would just really encourage just safe, be safe and know your story well.
And I think that just that know your story, I think sometimes you just need permission or just another voice speaking into you to say, yeah, dig there a little bit, allow yourself to sit there.
And one of the things that I want to do, we're going to do an episode on, I just thought of this actually, and we're going to do it.
I love how you state it. Like, it's like a thing.
I didn't just think about this. I have been thinking about it, but talking about it right now made it resonate.
Okay.
We need to talk about genograms.
Yes.
And we need have to said help that. People do a genogram.
So a genogram,
go back into their family history and do some work.
A genogram is like a family tree, except you look at more, it's a lot deeper. You're looking at relational patterns. You're looking at maybe addiction. You're looking at coping or self-medicators. So you're looking back at your siblings, your parents, your grandparents, even your aunts and uncles, and you'll start to see really interesting,
patterns.
Good word. Patterns of behavior or of coping or of lots of really interesting things.
And things that you carry into your marriage and things that you carry into your parenting. So it really is super powerful, and we're going to do it.
Great.
All right. Guys, thank you for your questions. We have more coming in, and they are fantastic questions. So please keep sending questions. And also, just as you send questions, submit topics that you think, wow, this resonated with me. Could you speak to this topic? We would love to hear that as well. But these questions really, I think, help so many listening. And they're spot on questions that we're all dealing with. So go to inthistogetherpodcast.com, hit the submit a question or topic button, and send it our way. And until next week, press in. And with your spouse or kids, enjoy the moment.
We love you.
Check out inthistogetherpodcast.com for previous episodes and to subscribe. If you have a question or a topic that you'd love us to cover, hit the submit button there on the page.
And we would also love if you would leave us a review. Your reviews mean so much to us and help others learn about the podcast. You can also find us on Instagram or Facebook. And for coaching and speaking inquiries, visit our website at drjoshandchristy.com.
Until next time, press in and live in the moment.